We've spent much time on redemption, and so let's proceed on to the actual Passover, unless somebody has questions about redemption. From death to life is what redeem means. All right, let's go to Exodus.
Just, I did have a comment. It's, when you talk about this, people kind of know what redemption means. It's a sort of understood concept a little bit, but not that much. You know, it's,
well, the problem is that when I was a kid, that's when they started green stamps. And you could redeem the green stamps for groceries, which, you know, the whole idea of redemption still used, you know, it's the way these words that are in the Bible get into general usage, and then they become meaningless because they take on the meaning of the world instead of the meaning of God. And that's the problem. That's why you must understand that everything that we have learned, all the traditions of our fathers and all the inventions of ourselves, they have to go to the cross. So there's an openness for a new understanding. All right, Exodus 12. Everybody there?
Close enough.
Close enough, if close doesn't count.
You're on one page, I'm on another.
And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months, and it shall be the first month of the year to you. Now, the idea of it being the beginning of months is much more inclusive than just the first month of the year. There's two years. There's the year that starts in the seventh month in Tishri, in which we have tabernacles. That's really the last month of the year for. No, it's not. Never mind. But the beginning of months here means it's the beginning, from your standpoint, it's the beginning of time. It's the beginning of time and the end of time. And if we can hear that, then we'll be able to have our ears circumcised so that there is no misunderstanding about these things. It's from death to life. That's what redeem means, and that's what Passover did.
That's interesting, the non sequitur of it here. They're going along talking about everything also this month. You know, where's that come from? But it's Passover. It starts.
Right.
With Passover.
Speak you unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, in the tenth day of the month, yet they shall take to them every man a lamb according to the house of their fathers, a lamb for a house. And if the household be too little for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next unto his house take it according to the number of the souls. Every man according to his eating shall make your count for the lamb. Now, that's the supreme definition of a Seder. It's the number of people that can eat the lamb, and each one be fully sated, satisfied, and there be nothing left over. And depending on the size of the lamb, it's from 10 to 20 people. And from the beginning of months, this is the definition of a church. It has all kinds of meanings other than that. It's the size of a group in which you can't hide, and the size of a group in which everybody knows each other, and so there's no acting. has all kinds of benefits. And it should be, again, if there be not enough people, then you, to eat the lamb, then you, your neighbor is invited. All right. Now, Passover typifies and includes all other sacrifices. They typify everything that's in the law because it was before the law. But that's why Passover historically has been the most enjoyable and the most, the feast with the most revelation for both Israel and the church. And we'll see here in a minute some other things. The lamb shall...
Can you talk for a second about why the two New Years? Why?
One is agricultural and the other is spiritual.
Why did they need a calendar for that?
What?
Why did they need a calendar for that?
Why did they need one?
Yeah, they already got a calendar here. Why they need, or they just want to separate spirit from?
Yeah, well, they have two calendars.
I don't know. I don't know why the second one's necessary if this one's good.
Well, because it's two different aspects, two different metaphors, two different parables. One is the killing of the lamb, and the other is the planting of seed. Both are about the same mystery.
Yeah.
The lamb has to die and the seed has to fall into the ground. The seed is harvested, the lamb is killed. But it's two different views of the mystery of God.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, great.
Get an A. Get an A for that answer. You passed your essay.
No problem here, man.
I don't think I've ever said that before. Your lamb shall be without blemish. A male of the first year, you shall take it out from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. The whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening. Now, why is a goat included here? It's a lamb, it can be a lamb or a goat, a sheep or a goat.
Okay.
Now, the reason is, this sacrifice included the Gentiles. The goats were always the Gentiles, and the lamb, the sheep were Israel. And so even in the Passover lamb, or goat, it symbolically included the Gentiles.
What exactly is there between a goat and a lamb? I mean, they're the same species? Or
no.
They're completely different.
Totally different. The goat is a... We raised both goats and lambs when I was a kid on a farm. And the lambs were real gentle and nice. And they... The goats, they were just like those damn geese that chased me all over the place when I was a kid. The goats chase you all over the place and they butt you.
Yeah, but they're spoken of in the same context. Goat, lamb.
One, because one represents the Gentiles and one represents Israel. So the overall picture is that 10,000 Israel are included in the Passover.
Okay, so the parable is...
So the idea that Israel represents all of the human race has to be, is maintained.
It's almost like the lamb is spiritual and the goat is carnal. It's the,
well, no, it's
the...
The lamb, all a goat can do is rebel.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just bad. They're just evil little beasts. I mean, I can remember that we had one of them that whenever he saw me, wherever I was, he would run all the way across the field to butt me. What?
What'd you do to me?
I was a little kid. My job was to pick up eggs, but the geese and everything. And that's a long story. I don't want to go into that.
Did you have bright red hair about that time?
I did.
Attractive.
I was a red-headed stepchild.
Even the goats.
Even the goats didn't like me. The wolf liked me. So,
what does that say?
Says it was a nice wolf.
Yeah.
The wolf had taste. Don't even say it, sir.
Me?
Me? All right. The other aspect that's said here is there's two more things in this few passages. One is, on the 10th day of the month of Nisan, they take the goat or the lamb out of the herd, and they spend the next 4 days inspecting the lamb. And they inspect it very carefully to make sure of all of the other things that we're not going to go into today, but that it's without spot or wrinkle. Now, that's the day that Jesus Christ entered Jerusalem, on the 10th of Nisan. And everybody thought he was the expected Messiah. Remember, they were not supposed to sing the Hallel or any part of it outside of the temple. That was a rule of the temple. I think it's implied in the script in the Torah, but it's stated in the Talmud. But here we had all these people singing Psalm 118 outside the temple with Jesus as he was entering the city. And they put palm branches down, again symbolizing tabernacles. They were convinced he was Messiah. And 4 days later, every one of them was either silent or yelled, "Crucify him." Now, what did he do in those 4 days? He did not meet the standards of the world vis-a-vis Passover. But this had to be fulfilled. All the congregation had to kill the Passover. Just think of the number of things that the Sanhedrin had about Christ. The first one was the 70 weeks were up. Second one was the shepherd priest reported that Messiah had come and the heavens opened and the angels sang. The third was the report of John the Baptist. And the fourth was the high priest himself said it is better for this one to die than the whole nation be destroyed. And yet, even though they had all of those signs that he was Messiah, we killed him. Now, what we have to understand is we also killed the Passover. Because if you don't understand that, then you will never understand that you're the chief of sinners. You'll never understand that you're the instead of Christ. And so you'll still go about your business trying to understand this stuff with your mind. Can't be done. You may understand it for a minute, but as soon as you walk out the door, you'll just be another normal Gentile. Because it isn't been made meat, it's just a philosophy. Amen? All right. The word for lamb is say in Hebrew. And it's interesting in that it means alone or desolate. no matter how much the human race tries for everything, for communion, for they're still alone and desolate. I mean, you may have thousands of people around you, but internally, you're still alone and desolate. And he certainly was alone and desolate, the Lamb of God. All right, where are we? Verse 7. And they shall take of the blood and strike it on the two side posts, on the upper door post of the house, when they shall eat it. Now, you understand that the reason the blood was struck on the outside is because when the death angel came through, the sign of the blood meant they were already dead inside. That's a biggie. So even in the very act of Passover, they showed forth the death of the human race. And then the new, his own right arm, or his own zeruah, his own seed, has gotten him the victory.
Just looking at that, the people inside were nothing special. They were just inside. And they didn't pass any tests to be inside. They were just there, so it's kind of like there's something more to that because there's no qualification other than the blood.
Okay, well, what happens next?
Kills people, kills everybody else.
No, I mean, what happens to them next? They have to eat the Passover lamb, and then they are baptized as they cross the Red Sea. So it prefigured their death in baptism. All right. They were killed on the Passover. They died when they crossed the Red Sea. That was their burial and baptism. Anybody understand that? What was the insight that they had seen when they went into the house?
Say that again, please.
What insight did they have when they went into the house? Think about it. Nine of the 10 plagues that occurred.
Yeah, it's pretty odd. Hey, come on in the house here quick, and we're going to paint blood on the doorpost, and we'll be okay.
Well, that's what Moses said. And the idea, it was the head of the household, or the father, is the one that had to kill the sheep, or kill the lamb, and then take the blood and put it on the doorpost. And he represented the priest. But when he did that, he was sentencing everybody in the house to death.
And at the same time, life and death at the same time, because if they are outside, they get killed. If they're inside, they die, or something like that.
Well,
they're dead to the world, because it's a separation between the Egyptians and the Israelites. So they have, at that point, they may not even realize it. Yeah, they've left their old life behind. That was the division, you know.
Yeah, and that's what it says it over and over in Exodus there, but there may be a division, a clear, bright, shining light between the people of God and the world. But now that light is dimmed, so there's almost, there's no, you can't even tell.
It's interesting to me how they were making declarations that they didn't know what they were. They're obedient to what Moses had said to do in the households.
But we don't know what their level of revelation was.
Yeah.
We know that Moses' level of revelation was much more than we can even dream of. He left time for 40 days and 40 nights, according to the world's method of counting. In that leaving of time, that's why he didn't eat or didn't drink anything, because he was gone. And in that time, I mean, we can't even conceive. In that time, he wrote the Torah. In that time, he saw the fullness of the mystery of God. In that time, he saw that even he, after the flesh, couldn't enter the kingdom, couldn't enter the mystery. So it's, he saw, he knew that he knew that he knew. There wasn't any doubt. And we don't know, well, how much he told. Well, I mean, there were so many times, the burning bush and on and on and on. And his, all the 40 years he spent wandering around Sinai. Here's a guy that was trained to be the next Pharaoh. He was trained in all of the mysteries of the Egyptian arts, if you will. He was trained in war. He was trained in every aspect, so that he would be the next Pharaoh. He was the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And I believe that was the Queen Hatshepsut, who became the first female Pharaoh. And then her brother destroyed every little and marred every artifact that was done in her honor. But she, again, she became, in the Egyptian world, she became the greatest woman that had ever lived. And they just, it was I find it fascinating that they just found her tomb. Just recently, there was just a big special on the History Channel about it.
Visceral part of this, where this lamb, and we've talked about this before, they kept the lamb in the family home, didn't they, for a while, or everyone cared for
4 days, yeah.
Yeah.
But that was, just think of that. Lambs were great pets.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I find this is just, there's nothing to it except I find it interesting. I belonged to the 4-H when I was. And my project, you had to have a project that you entered in the county fair as each member of the 4-H club. And my project was a lamb. And I raised the lamb from birth. And the lamb followed me all over the place until the stupid goat started chasing me. But anyway, the lamb died just before the 2 days, 2 or 3 days before the county fair. And you had to have a project. And so my project was, I baked a pineapple upside down cake, you know, with the butter and pineapple and brown sugar and all that. I did it, it was a pretty good job. And it won first place in that category, and I wouldn't accept it because I was so ashamed that my project was.
Cake.
But the lamb, you know, I can't even imagine what it would be like. I mean, just from my own memory of the association with that lamb, up to watch my father kill the lamb, I mean, it would be mind-bending.
Is that how he died? Your dad killed him?
No, no, no.
Oh, that's different.
No, he just got sick. But the, I mean, I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
As you know, the kids messed with the lamb and played with them.
Very.
I mean, this had to be, we can't even imagine what that would be like. Because we have nothing in our society that was, I mean, the idea, we take the, it's, you know, we take the death of Christ the same light, just as lightly. You know, we always have to invent a theology of glory instead of the theology of the cross. The theology of glory is something to do with, something to benefit me or give me some life. Or, and it's just crap. The cross is the cross, and you're dead. There's no more you. Now, as you've always been, you've been a vessel for deity. Finally, maybe you're the vessel for the right deity instead of deity. Well, that's probably enough for today. We're just starting the Passover in Egypt, so. I just want you to have a to use Gary's word, a visceral feeling. For Passover.
Yeah. Like, with that blood, real blood from something that you love, you had to kill, and now you got to put it on. I can sense a little more how powerful that experience was. You know, it's not one dimensional by any means. It's so full.
All right, anybody else? We didn't get very far today. But I guess that's pretty standard. All right, take it, big guy.